What's up, everybody? This is Big Red
and Average Ant,
and we just want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 4 of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. We got a pretty good little show for you tonight. It's gonna be a little short in our last couple. I know they seem to drag on, but that's what you kind of get going when you got those lists and rankings and all that. But today we're going to dive into a little bit of the first game of the season for the NFL. It's finally here, thank goodness. Then we're going to talk a little bit about one of the fattest contracts ever signed in the NFL by the newest member of the Bears. And then we're going to close it off with a little bit about Steve Nash and some things that he said recently. So with that, we will jump right into the Eagles and Falcons game. Like I said, football is back. Ant, what are your thoughts on the first game of the season?
I guess I just have one major question. What happened to your boy Matt Ryan?
You really got to come at me cold, bro. I was going to mention, I was going to say something. But first of all, I'm sorry to everybody that listened to me and took Matt Ryan. I hope you took him late.
Yeah.
If you took him early, like I know my dad did, I apologize. Yeah. There, Pops.
Did he do it because of you?
Yeah, that was a rough one. That was a rough one.
Oh, my God.
But I still got faith. Matty Ice can bounce back. You know, it's just one game. The Eagles defense is good.
Yeah. I was thinking that, too. The Eagles defense is good, but not necessarily elite to the point where he should be held to, what was he, like 10 of 30? 10 for 30, no touchdowns and a pick?
Well, all right. He was 21 of 43 for a pick and a fumble, but he had 251 yards. And his QBR was a 12.4, one of the lowest I've ever seen. But I don't know. He made some good throws. The Eagles' front seven is good, which kept pressure, but their secondary is weak, and Matt Ryan just missed a ton of throws. I mean, he was overthrowing guys, underthrowing guys, throwing up ducks into the arms of defenders, and it was pitiful to watch, honestly.
One receiver that didn't get underthrown, though, was Nick Foles. they ran the same exact play that they ran in the Super Bowl for, it was a 2-point conversion, yeah, wasn't it? Or was it a touchdown?
In the Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, so.
It was a 2-point or a touchdown.
Yeah.
One of the two, but it was in the Super Bowl, and that's what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, so they ran the exact same play. I don't get, like, Super Bowl ceremony or whatever, they get their rings. I mean, obviously, I feel like it's obvious that they're going to do something, you know, to make it seem like a big event and whatnot. So I don't know, as a defensive coordinator, how you like don't think they're going to try to bust that out at one point in the game.
You think they did it as kind of like a shot at the Pats, man? You think it was clowning on them a little bit? Showing like we can do this on anybody?
Yeah, somewhat clowning. I feel like it was more just... Yeah, I feel like it was more for the fans, the Eagle fans.
I mean, as bad as Nick Foles was as a quarterback on Thursday night, he arguably the best receiver on the field.
Yeah, for real.
No drops, 100% catch percentage. I mean,
first down catch percentage.
I mean, he's caught every pass I've seen thrown his way.
Yeah, for real. He's got the stickum on his hands or something. He's he's got, well, his yards per catch had to be like 12 yards a catch, something like that.
Dude, it was 15, man. He really turned on the Jets at the end.
That's too funny, man. All right, well, that's all we got on week one, since it was only one game so far. And so let's move towards something a little more personal, hits home a little bit more. Jake, you could hit the intro for this.
All right, well, Average Ant said it himself, this guy's a little bit more personal. It's probably because it was the best defensive player the Raiders have seen in a long, long time, and he was sent on over to Chicago. Khalil Mack and his monstrous new six-year, $141 million contract with $90 million guaranteed.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he deserves every cent of that. It's just super unfortunate that the Oakland Raiders couldn't give him that contract. Like, you're giving your coach, you're giving John Gruden $100 million over 10 years, and he's a coach. Like, I don't get why you couldn't give a generational talent defensive player. Like, I get he's a, like, defensive players, it's definitely a little hesitant to give defensive players huge contracts, but I mean, come on, dude. Like, he's the only reason why the defense isn't in the gutter of the NFL, that they're not, like, the worst-ranked defense in the league. I hate Mark Davis. I hate the Raiders front office right now. Once things were starting to look up, you just had to stab Raider Nation in the heart.
That's brutal. I mean, it's especially tough for me because I'm sitting here. Earl Thomas just reported back to the Seahawks, so he's about to play. But the Raiders were like, all right, Khalil Mack, you know, we were thinking about maybe improving our defense. That was one of the worst units in the league last year. But let's trade away one of the best defensive players in the league. Like, we don't need him. John Gruden is well worth that $100 million. I mean, he's done relatively little in his coaching career. And, you know, he's gonna take the Raiders from nothing with worse players now to a Super Bowl. I mean, it's obvious. So I would be excited if I were you.
I don't know. all the coaching success that John Gruden had, when he was in a coach, like in the 90s, 2000s, he had good defenses. So, it's a little scary for me that he's got no defense, $10 million. It's definitely Super Bowl or bust within the next however many years. I'm not going to give him 10 years. He doesn't deserve 10 whole years. I'm going to put it out like...
No, there's no way. If they don't win a championship, he's not sticking around. Yeah.
I'm putting that at 5 or 6.
10 years. But one of the reasons why he's going to have a worse defense is because Khalil Mack is one of the best defensive players in the league, and he is now a Chicago Bear for a long, long time, which, I mean, is fantastic for Khalil Mack. I mean, you're paid... and you're set for life. Injury or not, you got $90 million guaranteed. But in terms of implications for the rest of the league, Khalil Mack made an already pretty solid Bears defense from last year even scarier. Yeah. I mean, if Mitchell Trubisky takes the step forward, like my fantasy prediction thinks that he will.
Yeah, you don't have a good track record, though, so far on that. But
We're 0-1 so far. We're 0-1 so far, but... A lot of season left. But the Bears could take a sneaky step forward, and I know they're in a real tough division with the Packers and the Vikings. But I don't know. This Khalil Mack trade, it's big. And if Trubisky can step up, the Bears might be able to snatch some ground away from the Packers or the Vikings. I could see it.
Yeah, I could see them getting one of the wild cards. I feel like I'd definitely be fighting for number six spot, but I feel like they'll definitely be in the race for at least most of the season, unless something fizzles out at the end. But I feel like they'll be up there.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to a lot to how they start the season. Yeah. If they can start off hot and maybe upset the Packers here week one, then they would have a lot of confidence moving forward, and so would Trubisky. I mean, quite honestly, the Bears could be garbage. If Trubisky plays anywhere near like what he played last year, the Bears, Jordan Howard or not, Khalil Mack or not, are going to suck. The games will be closer, but then they'll lose 24-15 instead of 31-15. 15. I mean, it's, I don't know. The Bears sneaky. We got to kind of see how it plays out, but Khalil Mack definitely makes him a lot better.
Yeah, and like you said, how Khalil to the Bears has implications on the league, play style wise, I guess, playoff wise. It also has some implications for future contracts, for sure. Him and Aaron Donald both cashed out, got paid. Yeah. Aaron Donald was the number one. He was the highest paid defensive player of all time for a good few days until Khalil Mack got that.
Khalil Mack swoops it.
That's it's definitely gonna start to change the way not just defensive players are played too, but also skill players, running backs, receivers, all that. They're definitely going to be getting paid a lot more.
I think the Le'Veon Bell situation, depending on how that plays out, will have a lot of implication on how skilled players get paid. I mean, Khalil Mack won his holdout.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of rare. Earl Thomas we saw lost. Le'Veon Bell seems to be losing as the Steelers are content to go with James Conner. But Le'Veon Bell's next contract could be huge if you consider Le'Veon Bell actually to be one of the, I mean, he is one of the elite backs in football, catching and running. And so he still hasn't gotten paid, and it kind of makes you wonder, what are these running backs going to get, and how is this Le'Veon Bell situation going to play out?
Yeah, for sure. If he ends up losing his holdout, that'll be kind of heartbreaking for running backs and position players on offense. Here's arguably the best running back in the game, and if his team doesn't even want to pay him, what makes you think that you top 10 at best running back is gonna get paid anywhere near what this guy's getting, and he didn't even win his old out.
It's tough because running backs' careers seem to be so short, and so teams don't want to invest in them. But, I mean, God, when these guys go out and put out just workhorse seasons, the David Johnsons and Le'Veon Bells and probably, Zeke Elliott, and it's these guys aren't going to get paid, the production and superstar numbers they put up because of how short the lifespan on running backs are in the NFL now. And it's unfortunate. I feel like there's a fairly large pay discrepancy between position to position in football. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it makes sense from teams and financial standpoints in terms of money and holding on to players based on how long they're around and when their prime is. But I mean, it's real unfortunate for certain positions that seem to be dropping off, like running back.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a huge drop off in pay from quarterback to any other position. I mean,
yeah,
I guess it is true that quarterbacks, nobody influences the game as much as a quarterback does, but I mean,
true.
Sometimes a position player can. I mean, it's not going to be as sustainable as a quarterback. It's not going to be for a whole season, not a game-to-game basis, but I mean, I don't know, position players can definitely win or lose you a game, so.
Guys can step up and do something. I mean, it's a punt return for a touchdown can win you a game.
Yeah.
A forced fumble that would have been a touchdown or a major gain. It's these change the tides of games and are game-winning plays that they can make. And while quarterbacks, yes, I agree, do deserve to be paid the most, it's one of the things these sports are. Football is very organized in terms of positions is what gets you the most money. If you're in this position, this sucks, you're in this pay range.
Mm-hmm.
While in other sports, it's you're the best available talent.
Yeah.
You're getting this money. Like max contracts in the NBA, doesn't matter what position they are. If they are one of the best players in the league, they're going to get paid like it.
Yeah, in baseball too. Clayton Kershaw, is he still the highest paid in the MLB? He's still out there. I mean, he's getting 35 mil a year, and he's a pitcher. He doesn't he doesn't play every game.
Baseball is so ridiculous.
he doesn't even play every game, and he's a highest paid player.
Yeah, nah, there's guys with average annuals around 30 plus million. Usually they're pitchers.
Yeah.
Just because how valuable they are in today's game, but I don't know. But that's a prime example. It's regardless of position, pitcher that throws once every 5 days or position player that's out there every day, they are both capable of making a $25 plus million contract just because of how good they could be.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's just not how it is in the NBA. But Khalil Mack is one of the lucky guys that got around $23 million per year. So I guess he doesn't have to cry about it too much.
Yeah. Shout out to Khalil Mack securing the bag. I'm just sad it wasn't our bag.
I'm sure all Raiders fans are a little bit sad it wasn't too. With that, we will carry on into the Steve Nash insight here. He's talking a little bit about some regrets he had. You want to get us going, Ant?
Yeah, so the title of the article that is published on CBSSports.com says Steve Nash expresses regret over play style and that he should have shot the ball 20 times a game. I'll let you say your piece first about this.
So Steve Nash, he came out and said this, I mean, right around the time when he's about to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. Yeah,
that's today, actually.
I mean, yeah, he's getting inducted today. He gave a brilliant speech. If you guys haven't heard it, you should go check it out. If you're a Steve Nash fan, I guess. I mean, if you're not, I mean, nah, if you're a basketball fan, you should check it out.
Who isn't a Steve Nash fan, though?
I don't know how you can't be. I mean, the flow and just the pass-first mentality that he supposedly regrets. So Steve Nash, for me, it's, you look at today's NBA and it's guys just hoisting up shots and shots and shots and shots. And I mean, like, even pass first guys like a Chris Paul or a LeBron James, LeBron doesn't really count, I guess, just because he can do everything ridiculously well all the time. But he is a pass first guy, he said it himself, but he's still putting up a ton of shots a game. And I mean, you got people like KD and Russ throwing up tons of shots, and even Chris Paul now on the Rockets is shooting a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because he's with Mike D'Antoni, a former coach of Steve Nash, who, when actually in that CBS article, stated that he believed Nash could have averaged 30 points a game, and I mean, I believe it. If you look at the guy's numbers over the course of his career, he was a member of the 50-40-90 club 4 different times. And for those of you that don't know, that's 50% field goal percentage, 40% from the three-point line, and 90% from the free throw line. I mean, that's 4 separate times. That's unheard of. He's one of 7 guys to do it since the three-pointer became a thing in the NBA. And I mean, I don't know. It's ridiculous. It reminds me, his game, I guess, if I was comparing it to somebody in the modern NBA, would be a lot like Steph Curry to me, I guess. Not necessarily the passing piece, but like his shooting efficiency and like the things he could do with the basketball. I think if he shot more, he could have ended up having a career trajectory a lot more like Steph Curry's is right now.
Yeah, I get that D'Antoni's your boy and everything. But I'm gonna have to disagree with that. I don't think Steve Nash would be able to average 30 points at all. He, in the article, says that D'Antoni would have to force him to take 10 shots a game, which is ridiculous. Like, it's a ridiculously small amount of shots. I'm not saying that's ridiculous that he had to, like, force him to do that or whatever. But so Steve Nash, if he had the mentality of a shoot first, get buckets player, his efficiency would obviously be way down. I mean, his efficiency, I feel like, is definitely a product of his, or lack thereof, mass shooting, I guess I would say. Only taking 10 shots a game, it's a lot easier to shoot 50% only taking 10 shots a game than it is if you're taking 20, 25 shots a game. And where I disagree with you on the comparison to Steph Curry, I don't think he'd be able to be that level of a scorer just because I don't think he has like the offensive arsenal, I guess. Definitely not of a Steph Curry, and definitely not of a 30 points per game scorer. Like, yeah, he's easily one of the best shooters to ever play, but most of his three-pointers were spot-up shots, not crossover, step back, pull up from 30 like Steph Curry. So I guess I'd have to disagree with this whole article in general. He is definitely a pass-first player, and that's how he should obviously be been playing. That's how he played his whole career. That's how he became a Hall of Famer and a two-time MVP and all that. So I guess since you heard a little bit of my piece, you can refute or do whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, so I get you. I obviously his efficiency numbers are going to drop if he's taking more shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not claiming that he's going to shoot 20 times a game, 25 times a game, and then remain a 50, 40, 90 shooter. But, and I also do, I understand that he took a lot of spot-up shots, but I really, I don't believe that Steve Nash didn't have the ability to shoot off the dribble more. I mean, I would go on to say that maybe the athleticism and ability to take step backs and dribble moves and all those things that Steph Curry can do, maybe he's not on that level. And to an extent, 30 points a game might be high, but definitely don't think that there's no... I think there's no reason why Steve Nash couldn't average 25 a game, still shoot around 48% from the field, stay around 40% from three, like maybe 38, 39% shooting two or three more threes a game. I mean, he's a career 15, 16 point per game score already. It's, and I don't think just, and if he were to take 10 more shots a game, I don't think it's that unfeasible that he could average around 25 points a game. And so I do think based on numbers and the shooting ability that I think, that I believe Steve Nash has, I think he could do it. And so I don't know. My Steph Curry comparison might've been a little ambitious, but I still do think that you're underselling Steve Nash overall ability. His pass first mentality would be the one thing I couldn't check, and we can't check because it's an intangible that you can't sit there and just assume Steve Nash could shoot it like Kobe Bryant could shoot it, and he's going to average a million points a game because you can't measure that mentality. The Mamba mentality is something that is either in you or not. And to an extent, I guess I could agree that Steve Nash may just not have it. I mean, if he had it, why wouldn't he just be hoisting these shots up, especially if his coaches are sitting there telling him, we're not winning because you're not shooting. So I guess to that, mentality-wise, Maybe that holds him back quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think what also holds him back a lot from even attempting that many shots is D'Antoni's system that was in Phoenix at that time. Their leading scorer was Amari Stoudemire, and during that time he only averaged 14 shots a game. So even when like Amari went down, like in the playoffs and stuff, Steve Nash still wasn't really taking that amount, like a heavy workload on the shot end. I mean, you still had Joe Johnson and Sean Marion too to get shots up. And I think like Steve Nash, the mentality, like you said, is probably what held him back the most besides his like skill set and athleticism and whatnot. And that's what bothers me when he says that he regrets his play style, because that's what makes him Steve Nash. And some players are just better playing in like that role. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
James Harden is only as effective as he is because he takes so many shots. And it's like the complete opposite for Steve Nash. Like, he's only as effective as he is because he shoots as little as he does, as efficient as he does, while creating shots for all of his teammates.
True.
So,
I agree with that. I mean, I'm not disputing that Steve Nash is an excellent player.
And, yeah, me neither.
And he's absolutely deserving to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He had a fantastic career. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little too wrapped up in just the numbers alone. But I don't know. I maybe have a thing for pass first point guards with Chris Paul as a member of my Rockets. So. I don't know. I see Chris Paul. I believe Chris Paul could average 25 a game too.
Yeah,
but
I definitely think he could.
Might be a little different just because Chris Paul kind of seems like he does have that a little bit more of that attack mentality than Nash does. I mean, even though Chris Paul's not shooting a ton, ain't no coach telling Chris Paul that he needs to shoot at least 10 times a game.
Yeah, I mean, a little off topic here too, but. I definitely feel like Chris Paul probably would have had more success in his career if he was more of a shoot first, pass second player. Like this season in Houston, he wasn't necessarily shoot first, pass second, but he was more on the line. And I feel like it was definitely, maybe not numbers wise, his best season of his career, but in terms of success and play style and just killer mentality and giving the ball to him in the clutch. I mean, it was definitely his best season as far as that goes.
Yeah.
But that's a little off topic.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is, but it's really not because Steve Nash and Paul are so comparable in play styles. But I agree. I think that this was maybe not numbers-wise, and that's obviously going to happen when you have James Harden and Chris Paul on the same team, and James Harden still needs to put up his MVP numbers because he hadn't won it yet. Which, by the way, thank goodness that he has.
Yeah, for real.
Good Lord, I've been waiting forever.
I don't know what would happen if he got robbed again.
Dude, I don't even know. If he got robbed again, that dude's never winning.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
James Harden was starting to feel like the Chris Sale of the NBA to me. Like, he's going to keep putting up better numbers and never win that Cy Young. All right, this is a little off topic.
No.
But I do think Chris Paul did have the best year of his career in terms of, like, importance to the team. I mean, you saw
definitely.
How much better the Rockets were when Chris Paul was on the court. And, I mean, obviously that's true of the Clippers and other and the teams he's played on in the past. But, I mean, you saw it. The Rockets could have beaten the Warriors if Chris Paul was healthy game 6 and 7.
Definitely.
Chris Paul wasn't. The Rockets had a ton of offensive firepower that ran out of gas, just like D'Antoni's team seemed to do in the playoffs every year.
Yeah.
And so on a team that great to basically be the player that makes the difference in beating the best team in the world, like, how is that not your best season?
Yeah.
And you're playing with an attacking mentality that you haven't really experienced in the past.
Yeah, for sure. I guess back to Steve Nash. Congrats to Steve Nash, you know, Basketball Hall of Fame. Definitely a great career. Don't take what I said as a Steve Nash hating. what I like most about Steve Nash is his play style, and for him to say that he regretted it is just bogus to me. So,
no, I feel you. It kind of hurts, especially if you're somebody that loves the way Steve Nash played the game, and so he says, "Yeah, I wish I didn't play like that." You got to think about all these kids out there that like want to pass and play just like Steve Nash did, and like. I don't know. Especially if you grew up that way, like to have Steve Nash go at his right before his Hall of Fame speech and say, "Yeah, I wish I didn't play like that. I wish I shot more." I mean, it's kind of like, "Oh, dude, come on!" Like,
I
don't know. Steve Nash is a fantastic player, absolutely deserving of the Hall of Fame. He unreal career, and I agree with you in that regard. And I don't think he should regret the way he played at all.
Yep. Well, glad we came to an agreement at the end there.
You know, we had to get a little debate in or something, man. We agreed on way too much stuff. All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in to episode 4. Like we said, we cut it a little bit shorter. But thanks for tuning in. I am Big Red.
And I am Average Ant.
And we're signing off.
See ya.